This is Eric Krakauer from BN Sports, and you're listening to the Seleção Podcast.
Bem jogado por Simão, a passar por dois adversários, Simão, a tentar oferecer o gol a Figo, e a bola é gol! O gol da Figo!
Rui Costa vai, acreditou, vai tirar para o golo, atira o golo! 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 Golo!
And we welcome you to episode number 14 of the Seleção Podcast. My name is Danny Pinto. I am your host. Thank you so much for tuning in to our latest episode. A very happy Thanksgiving to all of you in the United States, as it is Turkey Day. It is Thursday morning. I hope you guys don't... we may have an interruption or two, hopefully not, but my kids are definitely awake and my wife is doing her best to wrangle them while I am recording this this episode on Thanksgiving morning. But just want to thank you guys so much for tuning in on this latest episode. A very special episode, an exciting episode, as Tom Kundert is going to be on the show. He, of course, of Portugal.net. He and I are going to be announcing something here at the end of the episode. So I can't wait for you guys to listen to that. But we are going to go over as well the matches in the Nations League versus Italy and Poland. Job done. It is off to the Final Four. Portugal qualifying for the Final Four as they got the draw in Italy. Not the prettiest football I've ever seen in my life these last two matches, but they were able to put themselves in a situation in the two previous matches by getting the win at home against Italy and going on the road and beating Poland 3-2. Having a game in hand heading into these last two matches, considering how Poland and Italy had gone in their group matches, was a huge plus. So obviously not the beautiful football we saw in the first two matches, but again, job done, and we are off to the Final Four of the UEFA Nations League next summer, which excitingly enough will be hosted by Portugal, or in Portugal, hosted by Portugal, hosted in Portugal. Either way, the cities of Porto and Guimarães will be hosting the semifinals, the third place match, and the final, of course. These matches taking place on June the 5th and 6th, the semifinals, and the third place match and the final will be on the same day, which is June the 9th. So obviously a lot to get to. We have our interview with Tom coming up, but first I wanted to just go over the two matches relatively quickly here, as again, you never want to take anything for granted, but with a game in hand and having a 2-point lead, while all you need is 1 point in two games to get to the Final Four, it was going to be, I think, a bit anticlimactic whether or not Portugal was going to qualify for the Final Four. You don't want to count your chickens before they hatch, but getting a draw was priority one. Getting a point was priority one in ensuring that you don't have to ensuring that you don't have to fight more than you have to qualify for the Final Four of the inaugural UEFA Nations League. To me, Portugal, the Seleção, Fernando Santos, his squad, did exactly what they needed to do in Italy. I am more than pleased with the fact that the qualification to the Final Four did not need a result against Poland. I'm very happy that they got the result in Italy. The Polish match, for all intents and purposes, was meaningless for Portugal. It meant a little something for Poland in terms of positioning in the pots. But job done, and I keep saying that, but it was the edict was to qualify for the Final Four, especially after the first two matches, and in match three they got the 0-0 draw against Italy in Italy, and it was what they needed to do. We do have some post game sounding, and not a lot to go over in these two matches. The 0-0 draw. Italy was all over the Slesong. Let's make no bones about it. They came out the aggressors for the majority of that match. The possession was just dominated by Italy throughout the match, but the defense, that back four, without Pep, because Pep was on suspension, you bring back Josef Font. He paired up nicely with Ruben Dias, who I called Ruben Neves about 600 times last episode. So, Ruben Dias, my apologies to you, but a nice pairing there in the back, especially in the central of the defense. João Cancelo had another solid game. I thought Mario Rui struggled just a bit, maybe not struggled, but just had not his best game. But again, that back four, the central defense in the midfield as well, I thought did its job enough to keep us keep the clean sheet. And what can I say about Rui Patrício, especially that early save about the fourth or fifth minute. You knew that he was coming to play. He knew and anticipated the type of aggressiveness Italy was going to be showing in that match. So we do have a little bit of post game audio. We first go to the aforementioned Rui Patrício, and he talks about the importance of fighting for qualification.
Tivemos muitas dificuldades em ter bola.
We found it very hard to get hold of the ball. Italy put us under lots of pressure. We fought hard for the result we needed to qualify, and we got it. That was the most important thing. We didn't play a great game, but we got what we wanted, which was to make the Final Four.
Queríamos que era estar na Final Four.
You hear it towards the end that he acknowledges that the Slesong did not play a great game. And I think we can all agree that they didn't play a great game, but you play sometimes for the result that you want, so the result that you need. And sometimes, you know, or I would say more often than not, a playing for a draw is not attractive football, but the job was done by the Slesong to get to the Final Four. We also have Ruben Dias talking about the difficulty of the game, but playing better in the second half and obviously qualifying for the Final Four.
It's a very difficult game, especially the first half. Italy were very strong, very dynamic. In the second half, we controlled the game better. We had more of the ball. We managed to create goal-scoring chances. We have to emphasize the commitment of the whole team and the fact we qualified.
I want to thank Tom Cunard for those audio clips, courtesy of Portugal.net, both the audio and the translation. So yeah, the Italian game was what it was. It was ugly. We were dominated, but in true Slesong fashion, we found a way to survive. We found a way to just grind it out, and that was the MO of the 2016 European champion team. And that I thought was a bit lost during the summer, but Nonsense currently has the combination where. We can play that attractive football given the first two matches, but we can also grind out the result, which again is not pretty to watch, but gets the job done. Let's get to the Polish match, and again, this for all intents and purposes for Portugal was a friendly. I mean, they obviously wanted to avoid injury, avoid any kind of issues going forward for the team, which we didn't totally avoid, and we'll talk about that in a bit, but. It started off very, very slow. No team really wanting to take control. But the Slesong did get on the board in the 33rd minute, courtesy of André Silva.
Renato Sanches a colocar a bola no sítio correto para bater este pontapé de canto. Há pouco foi à maneira curta com o apoio de Rafael Guerreiro. Renato Sanches agora a bater diretamente para a zona do primeiro posto. Desvio de André Silva.
That goal was André Silva's third goal in the competition and put the Slesong up 1-0. We fast forward to the second half, and again, not a lot going on stylistically for either squad, but there was a breakdown, a bad pass in the midfield that led to Danilo Pereira getting a red card in the box, a very controversial red card, in my opinion. I would say not even a clear penalty per se. I thought the officiating in this match overall was pretty poor. But Poland was awarded a penalty. Milik of Poland, he would step up and take the penalty and score in the 66th minute. He actually would score two PKs, but the first one was nullified by an infraction. It was never really clear if it was on Portugal or on Poland of entering the penalty box before the match or before the kick was taken. He would end up scoring against Bet. But because the infraction would have to retake it, and of course he would convert again to get us to where we ended up, which is 1-1. Again, a game that meant nothing for Portugal in the standings. They had already qualified for the final four, but for Poland it puts them in pot one when the UEFA 2020 draw for group play and qualification comes early in December. So. With qualification comes expectations, and we mentioned that Portugal not only has qualified, but they will be hosting the Final Four. And after the game, Pep was asked if they are now the favorites, the Seleção, if they are the favorites to win the Nations League.
No, I don't think we are favorites. We have to be humble, recognize the quality of our opponents, make the most of our strong points to play a Final Four that dignifies Portugal.
You know, I think a very dignified answer by Pep. Obviously, you don't want to put too much into hosting. I mean, hell, it's happened before where we've hosted and we've lost in 2004, and we also beat the team that hosted the Euro in 2016 and got our first title. So, but I thought a very tempered answer by the central defender Pep, who hopefully has another run in him for next summer. I mean, the guy is so valuable to this Seleção, has been such a steady force now, just completing his 11th season as a member of the Seleção, and hopefully Pep is there with us next summer. So the desired outcome, qualification for the Final Four, has been met, has been done. Congratulations to Fernand Santos and the entire Seleção for getting to the semifinals of the UEFA Nations League. And just what an opportunity it is for this team to not only solidify themselves as I want them to be considered a giant of Europe, and I still don't think they get their just due. Quality of play, they're a one-man team, yada yada yada, we've heard it all. Being able to get to a final or a semifinal in a competition where France, Germany, Belgium, Spain do not qualify for the semifinal tells me all I need to know about A, the quality of this tournament, and B, the quality of the Seleção, especially without Cristiano Ronaldo. Make no mistake, Cristiano Ronaldo is the cog in this wheel, but you've seen the ability of this team potentially going forward, and it's not as dreary and it's not all doom and gloom as it maybe was 2-3 years ago, where we really didn't know where we stood without Cristiano Ronaldo, and we fully don't know where we stand yet, but I do think it's more of a definite positive than it was just a few years ago. We mentioned that we have Tom Kundert on the show today, and so grateful to him for taking some time and coming on the show right here on episode number 14 of the Seleção Pod. Let's get to that interview right now as you're listening to episode 14 with our guest, Tom Kundert of Portugal.net. And it is with great pleasure that we have a return guest, our second return guest in as many episodes, Tom Kundert of the world famous Portugal.net. Tom, of course, is considered to be the leading advocate of English speaking coverage of the Seleção and of Portuguese league and all things Portuguese soccer. And we are thrilled to have him on once again on episode number 14 of the Seleção podcast. Tom, it's Danny Pinto. Early for me, the afternoon for you. How you doing, sir?
Yeah, I'm fine, thanks. Yeah, great to be here again, Dan. Always, enjoy contributing. He gave me a fantastic welcome there. Please, like I said last time, please don't call me sir. You know, we're all Portuguese together in this.
Well, you know, it's just a matter of respect, sir. I did it again, but it's always great to have you on, and I'm glad you were able to come back on this on a very special Thanksgiving edition here in the States of the Seleção podcast. I understand it is just a regular old Thursday for you in Lisbon.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, happy Thanksgiving to everyone over there. Yeah, just a normal Thursday for us, a normal working Thursday, but special one for you guys, so have a good one.
Well, Tom, let's get right down to it. The job was pretty much almost a foregone conclusion without getting a little ahead of ourselves, but Portugal had secured 6 points in two matches heading into their third match of group play in the UEFA Nations League, and all they needed was a result either in Italy or back home versus Poland. What were your thoughts in the manner in which Portugal qualified in Italy, and what were your thoughts on the last two matches overall?
Yeah, well, I think these last two matches perhaps a little bit of a reality check for Portugal, because, you know, we'd all been so excited with the way they'd started this Nations League tournament. They really are fantastic in the home game against Italy, in the away game against Poland, possibly two of the best performances we've seen in quite a few years from the Seleção. And, of course, we were all hoping they would take that into these last two games, sweep aside Italy and, you know, get through in some style. That didn't happen, but I think realistically, it would be very difficult for that to happen. We have to remember Italy are a top side, despite not going to the World Cup. You know, they are one of the world's most historic football nations. They're obviously got a bit of wounded pride. And the way they tore into Portugal, you could really see they were set on trying to make amends for their, you know, recent bad results. So I was actually really pleased with the way Portugal fought in that game, the determination they showed, perhaps some qualities which we don't always traditionally associate with Portugal, you know, really rolled their sleeves up and just dug in there, got the result they needed. And then the game against Poland, I think that was just a reminder of why this tournament has been such a success, in my opinion, because that game was a little bit of a nothing game, you know. Although Poland, they had some motivation because they needed a point to be seeded for the European Championship draws, and so you could kind of tell they were putting a lot of effort into it. Portugal, they kind of went into the old friendly mode, didn't they?
A little bit.
Not a bad performance, but you know, you could tell there wasn't really that, you know, extra bit of pressure from needing the result. And like I say, a little bit of reality check. We've got some fantastic players. We've got the possibility, I think, of becoming a really elite really elite international team if we're not already. Of course, we're the European champions, but really almost taking it up a level. But I think these two matches just showed, you know, there's still a bit of work to do.
We're talking with Tom Cundert of Portugal.net. You can follow Tom on Twitter at Portugal1. Tom, let's hit a little bit on that reality check. The fact that they've made the Final Four is an accomplishment in itself. The fact that they did it without Ronaldo, to me, is the overwhelming positive of this tournament so far. What does the accomplishment of making the Final Four without Cristiano Ronaldo, what does that say of just the potential of this Lesong moving forward once Ronaldo decides to hang up the boots?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, that's something which all Portuguese fans have been worried about, isn't it? Ronaldo, this really superhuman footballer. I don't think there's any doubts really anymore that he's the best Portuguese footballer of all time. So many times he's been Portugal's saviour in qualifying in tournaments. The big worry was that when he left, would Portugal kind of, you know, lurch into a bit of a, I wouldn't say a backwater team, but a team that, you know, struggles to make a mark at tournaments. And I think that's why this Nations League, campaign has been so positive, because we saw that there is life after Ronaldo. You know, especially those first two games, like I said a while ago, really fantastic performances. Not only the victories against Italy and against Poland, but the manner in which they played. I mean, they were both one goal victories, but they were really convincing victories. Those score lines don't really tell the story of those matches. And from an individual point of view, of course, we had some fantastic performances. I think Joao Cancelo has really stepped up and proved he's one of the best right-backs in the world. Bernardo Silva in those two games was fantastic as well. Of course, he's absolutely tearing it up for Manchester City. And, you know, it's great to see him at last bringing that to the table for the national team, although I'm sure we'll come on to that a bit later. That didn't happen at all in the second game against Italy. And then I think even some of the peripheral players really impressed me. Players like Bruma, you know, he showed that I think now he's got over that kind of youthful stage of still, you know, maybe perhaps being a bit overawed by the big stage. I think he came into the side pretty seamlessly and was very impressed with him. Of course, Ruben Neves, again, playing so well and in such a calm and accomplished manner that it makes a lot of people wonder if perhaps it was a mistake not taking him to the World Cup. Ruben Dias, of course, at the heart of the defence. We know that's possibly a potential weakness for Portugal. Not many up-and-coming options in that area. But, you know, he did very well again. He played all the games and, again, against top opposition and didn't look out of place at all. So, really, you know, a lot of positives there, I think. I think if after the World Cup we were all a little bit down with a bit of a disappointment, let's not beat about the bush going out to Uruguay and really not playing a single really impressive game if we're honest about it in Russia. But you know, they've turned it around and they look again like a team on the up and a team that's ready to defend their European Championship crown. And before that, you know, perhaps get another tournament under their belt.
We're talking with Tom Kundert of Portugal.net. Of course, you can follow Tom on Twitter at Portugal1. You mentioned Ruben Dias and the lack of depth at the center back position. In our last episode, I had a friend of mine, Jimmy Enge, on episode 13, and he mentioned there is a possibility, in his opinion, of a lack of depth and a lack of development in the goalkeeping area. Right now it's Rui Patrice and it's Rui Patrice and it's Rui Patrice, and we have Bet, who played in the Polish match last time, but he's in his upper to mid 30s now, or mid to upper 30s, and there isn't that clear next in line to take over for Patrice, and Patrice still has years ahead of him. But you know, the Claudio Hamsch has been called up a couple of times with these Nation League squads, but I believe he had a bit of a knock heading into the Polish match, and that may or may not have been the reason why he didn't get a run. But is that an area that concerns you? Maybe not as much as the center back position, but in the next couple of years, that's something that you'll keep an eye on as well.
Yeah, I think that's, I listened to that episode, a very good show as usual, and a very good point made by your guest, and I agree entirely, with his overall point, which was he's a little bit disappointed with the lack of alternatives experimented by Fernando Santos, you know, for the backup goalkeeper and even the third choice keeper. He tends to always go for the same names without giving the young goalkeepers much of a chance, which I think is a fair criticism. And, of course, the result of that is, we, like you said, we don't really have any very young goalkeepers with any real experience to speak of at that senior level. That said, you know, I think we're blessed in Rui Patricio is one of those players who I think goes a little bit under the radar in terms of the world game. I think he's not really appreciated for how good he really is, in my opinion. He's definitely an elite goalkeeper, probably top 10 goalkeeper in the world. So he's got a very good injury record as well, very rarely misses games. So, and you know, in general, goalkeepers tend to have a longer career than outfield players. So hopefully we're okay there for 6 or 7 years. But yeah, for sure, you're right that it's important to give young goalkeepers a chance. Claudio Ramos, who you mentioned, has done a fantastic job for Tondela. With all due respect to Tondela, I'm quite surprised, you know, a bigger club didn't come in for him over the summer, or even a foreign club. But, you know, it's good to see that he's getting a little bit of a sniff of the Seleção anyway. I'd certainly like to see that, you know, continue. Also, the two Sas, José Sá, of course, the former Porto goalkeeper and under-21 goalkeeper, who's now in Greece, playing under Pedro Martins for Olympiacos. And also a very good goalkeeper who's one to keep an eye on. Curiously, he's got the same surname, Sá, which is Thiago Sá at Braga. You know, I think that's three good goalkeepers, three good potential goalkeepers. Hopefully one of them will really, you know, kick on and become, you know, a viable second option for Portugal. So I think that's, you know, that is an area of concern, but I'd say not a great concern at the moment, you know, touch wood. As long as Patricio stays fit, I think that's an area where perhaps, you know, Portugal don't have to worry so much, certainly not as much as centre-back.
Hey, Tom, go ahead and knock one more time just for some extra good luck.
Yeah.
There it is.
Right.
You're listening to episode number 14 of the Seleção Podcast. I'm your host, Danny Pinto. I am joined by Tom Kundert of Portugal.net. Tom, we learned that after Portugal had qualified for the Final Four that they would also, the country would be hosting the semifinals and the finals of the tournament in Porto and in Guimarães. How much pressure, we'll fast forward to June here, but how much pressure will be on Fernando Santos and whoever is on that final roster for the tournament? How much pressure will there be on them to win the Nations League Final Four, especially given that it is in Portugal?
Yeah, it's a good question. Of course, we heard in the audio clips that Pep answering that very question, because I think the interviewers at the end of the Poland game asked this question to all the Portugal players, you know, do you consider yourselves favourites now to win this tournament? And it was noticeable that Pep, just like the rest, kind of did his best to kind of downplay the favourites tag. He was saying, you know, well, you know, the high quality teams, which is true, you know, four of the best teams in the last 5 or 6 months, according to these results. And so, you know, the opposition is going to be tough. There's no doubt about it. That said, you're absolutely right. Portugal are hosting the tournament. You know, the fans, I think, more than perhaps, even more than the media, perhaps, the fans are really going to be hoping to see some success. Of course, the slightly older ones, we've still got in the back of our mind that the wonderful tournament, which was the European Championships in 2004, which was really a memorable time for Portuguese football and really Portugal itself as a country. It really was, I often say, I've been here for 24 years now, living in Portugal, and I think that was perhaps the 25 or 26 days of that tournament was perhaps the most amazing time I've ever been in Portugal, because the whole country just got right behind the tournament and just created this whole wave of enthusiasm that was just infectious across all generations, across all, you know, social strata. It was just an incredible time to be in Portugal. Of course, this is a much shorter tournament. Of course, nobody expects the same kind of wave of enthusiasm to, you know, to build to quite to that extent. But certainly, you know, Portugal will be looking to put on a show for their fans, and you know, it's a trophy. So it's a trophy among some of the elite, you could say, really, all the elite countries in the world, minus Brazil and Argentina. So it would be quite a feather in their cap if they managed to win it. It's going to be it's interesting having a look also at the opposition. Portugal have actually got some fantastic record against the Netherlands and against England in tournament play. They've played I think, eight times in total, and they've only lost once, which was the first game against England way back in 1966 when England were hosting the World Cup. After that, they've come out on top in their three encounters against the Netherlands, and they've actually come out on top against England, which is always quite satisfying, because we all know that the English kind of dominate the media agenda and the press, and they do have a tendency to kind of dismiss a little bit Portugal, especially when it comes to playing England. And so it's always nice to get one over on them. So,
absolutely.
Let's see who Portugal get in the semi-finals. You know, the draw's coming up here at the start of December. And I just hope it's a fantastic tournament. Hopefully, you know, it'll be in June, so there'll be some fantastic weather here in Portugal. One thing about England and Holland, I was reading in the papers that a lot of the organisers here in Portugal are quite excited, because they are the two European countries that bring the most fans to these tournaments. And so, you know, it's going to be a fantastic congregation of, football supporters up in the north of Portugal. You know, hopefully there won't be any disturbances, and they'll just be here for, you know, to enjoy a festival of football.
We're talking with Tom Kundert of Portugal.net here on episode number 14 of the Seleção podcast. Tom, it seems like the Nations League has been an overall success. What was your thoughts initially heading into the Nations League tournament, and what are they now? And to also a second question to that is, what does it say about the competition that the reigning world champions, the reigning second place team, and also Germany and Spain and Belgium, as I mentioned, France, Croatia, none of those teams are in the Final Four. What does that say about the tournament and the quality of the tournament?
I think it says everything. I think it's been an absolutely roaring success. If you ask me what I thought about it at the start, I think, like most people, had a quick look at it, didn't really understand it fully. It looked a bit complicated, but kind of had an open mind, say, okay, let's see how this goes. I think now, a few months down the line, absolutely no doubt about it. I think it's been a fantastic success. You look at some of the matches, you know, it's been great for us because Portugal have done well, but I think overall, I remember seeing highlights, for instance, of the Croatia-Spain game when Croatia had to win to stay in the tournament. And, both of those countries are out now, but that was just an absolutely fantastic game. The games involving the Netherlands and Germany, even the Portugal-Italy game, though perhaps for neutrals that wasn't such an exciting game. But, you know, the level of intensity the players were putting into it, these are professional footballers, and you can tell there's a huge, huge difference when they're playing for, you know, when there's something on the line to when it's a friendly. And that was just absolutely evident in this tournament. So, and I think the whole format of the tournament has just worked out beautifully because, you know, virtually every game, there's something riding on it right until the end. It's short and sweet, but that makes all the games relevant. And like you said, just, you know, look at the countries which didn't make the Final Four. And it wasn't like, you know, Spain and Germany and France were sending out second string teams. That wasn't the case at all. You know, I think virtually all the teams sent out their full strength sides virtually every match. And so, you know, when you compare this to the old meaningless friendlies, I just think there is no comparison. It's just been a fantastic tournament. I think even going further down the leagues, you know, I think it's much more, I wouldn't be patronising, but much more useful for the very small countries, and perhaps better for their development that they play against countries of a similar standing. And so, you know, they're not just getting thrashed 5-0 or 6-0 in the qualifiers. They actually play against teams where they've got a good chance of getting a good result. And they've also got a definitive goal to aim for, and a realistic goal, which is getting promotion, you know, to the league above them. So, yeah, for me, I think, UEFA get a lot of criticism, a lot of it rightly so, I think. But in terms of this tournament, I think it's a fantastic idea, really well designed, and I really don't think it could have gone any better.
And Tom, the winter does get busy for Portugal, and they really don't even play a game until next calendar year, 2019, because on December the 2nd, they're going to find out who they're going to be grouped in or grouped with in the group play for the Euro 2020 qualification phase, and then the next day they find out who they will be playing in the semifinal of the UEFA Nations League. So while there isn't a lot of matches now, and not a lot of training, not a lot of preparation for matches, there is still so much information that is still to come to us. That this winter is going to be very, very interesting, especially that first week in December.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that will kind of whet everyone's appetite, won't it? I still think I think perhaps this has been the most exciting part of the international calendar post World Cup. I think the European qualifiers will. I don't think they'll be much different to the previous European qualifiers, to be honest. And especially with the expanded tournament, I think it's very difficult for top teams to miss out, to be honest. Even though it's going to be interesting because, of course, Germany, because of that Poland draw against Portugal, they went into pot one and pushed Germany down to pot two. So whoever gets Germany in their qualifying group, that's going to make things a little bit more difficult for them. You know, one of the top seeds could be Portugal. That said, even if that does happen, I'd be quite surprised if Portugal struggled to qualify because it's top two, I think, in every group go through. It's basically you have to really screw up badly not to qualify. And of course, we've now got the failsafe of if they do terribly, or if any of the top countries do terribly in the normal qualifying. Then a few of them, including Portugal, have got a second chance through the playoffs. And so, I think it's going to be interesting. Actually, I think perhaps the only negative aspect of the Nations League is I think we're going to see a lot of those qualifying matches really feel a little bit irrelevant or less relevant than they would have anyway. And I suppose that's the price which is paid for it. But then it's just a question of looking forward to, the Nations League, which is, it's, of course, all the even years. We've always got a fantastic tournament to look forward to, either the European Championship or the World Cup. The odd years is usually a bit of a, a bit of a hiatus, a bit of a, just a summer off and not much going on. But next summer, that's going to be different, of course, because we've got this... small matter of trying to win the first Nations League. So, yeah, plenty to look forward to.
We're wrapping up here with Tom Kundert of Portugal.net here on episode number 14 of the Seleção podcast. And Tom, we talked about the winter, but the summer, obviously, with the UEFA Nations League final, the semifinal and final, taking place on June 5th and June 6th. The final is on June the 9th. It's a very jam-packed schedule, potentially, for the Seleção, and I'll tell you why. Because the Champions League final is just about, I think it's 4 or 5 days prior to the Nations League semifinals. And then you have match day 3, which is June 7th and 8th, and match day 4 on June the 10th and 11th of the group play for qualification for Euro 2020. I don't know if logistics have been made already by UEFA, but that could be a very, very interesting time for the Seleção this summer.
Yeah. I think also we were talking about the benefits, of course, of Portugal getting to these, getting to the Final Four. I suppose the only potential slight disadvantage is that, a lot of players, a lot of coaches, a lot of managers, a lot of administrators talk about the importance of players getting good rest, in the summer. And I think for Portugal's players, Portugal's top players, they looks like they won't be getting much rest or their summer holidays will be cut short again as if it was, a tournament year. Although, of course, we're talking about two kind of high intensity matches and not you know, a tournament with potentially five or six. So yeah, I think that's you know, to be honest, Danny, I think, you know, they're professional footballers, and probably what they, well, certainly I think what they like more than anything else is playing, you know, high profile, high pressure games where there's a lot at stake, there's a potential to win trophies. So I don't think that will, you know, and we've had this, I don't think that'll be too much of an issue. We've had this issue in the past, of course, with Ronaldo. Of course, the last 3 years, he's got to the Champions League final. And so he's had to join up with the Portugal squad, both at this year's World Cup and at the previous European Championship, a little bit later than the rest of the players. But I remember Fernando Santos asked about this on both occasions, and he was saying that, you know, no problem at all. If Cristiano Ronaldo comes here, and this, of course, applies to any other players, perhaps João Cancelo at Juventus, perhaps Bernardo Silva at Man City, like you were suggesting. If a player comes here having just picked up the Champions League, or just, you know, or having just played the Champions League final, which is, you know, basically the, you know, the biggest club game in the world, they're going to come here, you know, full of confidence. They're going to come here, you know, kind of riding the crest of a wave. So, and, you know, probably still with the adrenaline pumping. So I'm not really sure that's too much of an issue. I think it just makes it more interesting for Portugal, and really for the sake of Portuguese football and Portuguese footballers. How about this, Danny? A Champions League final, Juventus against Manchester City, the three Portuguese players on show having a stormer, and then 1 week later, playing on the same team and taking Portugal to glory in the Nations League. How about that?
I'm all in for that, Tom. I'm absolutely all in for that. You've painted such a positive picture there that yeah, now I'm not worried about the schedule anymore because of that. Absolutely. That's amazing. Tom, finally here, I just want to thank you for coming on. You know, it kind of worked out in terms of scheduling and the holiday here in the States that today is Thanksgiving, and I want to thank you always for your support. But not only that, I actually want to thank you for the conversation we've had in the last week or so, and I'm very excited for you to share a special announcement that I just can't wait for people to hear, and I am just so excited about.
Yeah, well, you know, the whole, like, you know, Portugal.net is kind of my baby in a way. It's built up over the years. And I think the reason it's been quite successful is because there's been, thankfully, lots of excellent contributors and, you know, high quality content I've been able to put on the, you know, on the site. And I've been very impressed with your podcast right from the start. You know, I think you're doing a fantastic job for all the English speaking Portuguese and Portugal supporters out there. So, yeah, I was more than happy to suggest to you. I'm delighted that you agreed that we could, you know, host a podcast on the site, give it more exposure that it deserves. And, you know, hopefully increase the numbers and basically help increase this community right across the world. As we all know, and we've discussed previously, a massive community is the Portuguese diaspora, you know, really all four corners of the world. And so hopefully this will, you know, spread the podcast a bit more. And I'm delighted that we can team up and provide more good quality content for all lovers of Portuguese football.
Yeah, I can't tell you how excited I am and how humbled and how thrilled to be in a partnership with you and Portugal.net. And if you're listening to this episode or to an episode here for the first time, I hope you can tell the passion that I have. You know, Tom calls Portugal.net his baby. Well, this podcast is my baby too. It's something that I've wanted to do for such a long time, and the response that I've gotten from not only you know, folks in the industry like yourself, Tom, and Eric Krakauer from BN Sport, and now I can say my colleague at Portugal.net, Nathan Motes, and others, as well as just friends of mine who I've brought on to the podcast who have shown their support and their interest. It's something that I've always felt was lacking as I was following the Slesal more and more growing up. And when I came across your site years ago, I was like, yes, finally something that folks that are not from Lisbon, not from the Azores, who, yeah, they may be first, second, third generation Portuguese, but you know the grasp of the language to completely understand what is going on with the Slesal, you know, was lacking a bit. So to be able to be part of something like Portugol.net going forward is just a huge honor. And I really, really thank you, especially on this Thanksgiving here in the United States.
Yeah, it's no problem, Dan. It's like I said, I'm always delighted to have you know, high quality content, and that's what it is. That's what you produce. Just let me give you a little example of why, kind of one of the reasons that still grates on me a little, and I'm sure on you and lots of Portuguese people all over the world, that the fact that Portuguese football in general, I think, in the worldwide media doesn't quite get the exposure, I think, or the time or the information out there which it deserves. For example, I think it was on Sky Sports, or it may have even been the BBC, you know, a very, you know, a worldwide outlet. I remember reading a preview of the game against Poland just the other week. And they were talking about, you know, it would be interesting to see if Cristiano Ronaldo makes the lineup. You know, and this was on the Friday. So, like, anyone who's paid any sort of attention to Portuguese football, you know, knows exactly what the situation is there. So that's just kind of example of the way people just really don't take much, you know, a lot of the kind of serious media, you could call it, or, you know, big media or whatever you want to call it, just really doesn't devote much time or effort to covering Portugal in a professional manner, I don't think. So I think that's one reason why, that's certainly one reason why your podcast has been such a success, and why, you know, podcast has Portugal has a lot of visitors, is because it's somewhere where, you know, like you say, people who really have in-depth knowledge of, you know, of Portugal and Portuguese football can have serious discussion about it, and you know, not just superficial stuff.
Well, again, Tom, I can't thank you enough for reaching out and asking me to be to work with you and be a small part of Portugol.net, and I can't wait to have you back on and contributing to the site and putting out more podcasts and just making this a partnership that hopefully leads to many years of coverage and hopefully starting with this summer, many more trophies on the mantle.
Yeah, that's it, isn't it? That's the main thing. I think it's an exciting time, isn't it? Basically, to be a Portuguese football fan.
We're getting in at a good time. You know, it's not 94 where we missed out against Italy to go to the U.S. We're in semifinals almost every couple of years now, so it's a good time to do this show, right?
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. I think I still think just to make that next step, we need the world's media to start considering Portugal as an elite team, which they still don't do. But you know, I think sooner rather than later, they're just going to have no choice and to, you know, to look at Portugal through different eyes, because they've just you know, it's for a country of 10 million, it's outstanding what you know, the quality that the country produces, the quality of footballers, the quality of coaches, and the quality of the national team. And you know, like you said, I'm going to really look forward to these podcasts over the coming years, and hopefully we'll be reporting on you know, many more days like that memorable 10th of June 2016 in Paris.
Well, now do I end the podcast by saying thank you for coming on, boss? I got to figure out what to say now, Tom.
No, don't want anything like that. No, boss, nothing like that. It's just a revel in you know, being a Portuguese football fans together, and you know, just reporting on this wonderful journey.
Awesome. Well, Tom, thank you so much again for coming on episode number 14, and obviously can't thank you enough for the opportunity to be part of Portugal.net, and just you know, looking forward to a great partnership with you. And if we don't speak between now and the end of December, hope you and yours have a great Merry Christmas and a happy holiday and a wonderful New Year.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks, Danny. Same to you. Happy Thanksgiving. Happy Christmas. And speak again soon.
And yeah, to say that I am, and I hope you guys can hear that in or heard it, I should say, in the interview. I am very grateful for this opportunity to be a small part of Portugal.net. Tom Cundert is one of those guys that allowed people like myself, as I talked about in the interview, someone who I am first generation from, I'm first generation born here in the United States. My parents are both from the Azores, from the island, from the Ilha da Terceira, and I grew up speaking Portuguese. Portuguese was my first language. Now you get to school, kindergarten, grade school, middle school. You know, obviously English is going to be taking over because that is the only way to survive. But I never lost my love for our culture, and I never lost the ability to speak Portuguese. It's something I enjoy doing. I love having conversations in Portuguese. But in terms of the coverage for the Seleção, that was always a bit of a challenge for me. I would have to ask my dad sometimes, about, hey, this is going on in Benfica, right? I read this correctly, right? And this is going on with the Seleção. This is going on in Porto or in Sporting. And sometimes I'd get it right. Sometimes I'd be so off that I almost felt bad asking him what I thought about what I thought it was first. But having an outlet like Portugal.net allowed me to have my love of the Seleção grow even more, if that's even possible. Because I've mentioned this before, the Seleção is my number one in terms of teams. You know, here in the States, I love the 49ers in the NFL. I love the Sacramento Kings. We're based here in the Sacramento area. The podcast is here in California. I love the Oakland A's. But there is nothing that compares to the Seleção. And to have an outlet like Portugal.net that I can follow now much easier and have more knowledge and have more to bring to the table when talking to folks like my dad and his friends and even, you know, my friends now, where we now know a little bit more because of outlets like Portugal.net. To be a part of it now in whichever way it's going to be with this podcast, I can't thank Tom enough for reaching out and giving me this opportunity, and I just, you know, I'm flattered, I'm humbled, and I just can't wait for this show to be shared with a lot more people, because Tom's reach is a lot bigger than mine, and I just can't wait to get this next chapter of the Seleção Pod up and running. So on this Thanksgiving Day, believe me, I am very, very thankful to Tom Cundert and everyone over at Portugal.net, but I am also extremely thankful for everyone who has supported the show from its inception, or if you're just coming on now. I appreciate everyone who interacts with us on social media. I appreciate everyone who listens to us, listens to the podcast, whichever way you're doing it, Apple Podcasts, engine that you use. The feedback has been great. Folks that I've reached out to be guests on my show, whether they be and I'll use this term just to you know, differentiate here, but the titans of industry of this thing, like Tom Cundert, like Nathan Motes, Eric Krakauer, to my best friends and my godson, and just people who share this love of the Seleção that I do, that they do, and to be able to have an opportunity and a platform for that. So I can't thank you guys enough on this Thanksgiving for all the support that you've given the show. And I can't thank my wife and my two boys for allowing me to take time away from them, because the behind the scenes stuff, there's a lot that goes to it. It's not just the 45, 50 minutes, 60 minutes that you hear on the show. There's a lot of behind the scenes stuff that needs to go on, and that takes time away from them. But my wife Suzette is extremely supportive, and my boys Eliseo and Lucas, they are my world, and I'm thankful to be their pai. I'm thankful to be Suzette's husband, and I'm thankful to share this podcast with all of you. So I'm gonna go ahead and end it there before I get too mushy here. but I can't thank you guys again for the support. Thank you so much for Tom Kundert for joining us on episode 14, and thank you for the opportunity to be partnering up with Portugal.net. I can't wait to see what the future holds for this show, for Portugal.net, and for all of us. All of us Stugas who love and support and follow and bleed red and green, and it's gonna be a great ride, and I'm glad you guys are along with it with me. So my name is Danny Pinto. Thank you so much for joining us on episode number 14, and Forza Portugal!